This is a true crime roundup from the On Deadline podcast. We explore crime stories reported on by Odyssey's radio newsrooms across the country. I'm your host, Lauren Berry. This week, we have updates on the Vance Belter case in Minnesota and more. Belter, who admitted to killing Democratic Minnesota House Speaker Emeritus Melissa Hortman and her husband, in addition to attacking others, received two life sentences this week. However, some were hoping for a longer trial and for Belter to get the death penalty. We're also going to explore how lawmakers and law enforcement officials in Minnesota and other places around the country are trying to reduce crime. In a Minnesota courtroom, the fate of admitted killer Vance Belter was announced Thursday, July 23rd. He'll be in prison for the rest of his life. Odyssey station WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities reported on what it was like as the sentence was delivered.
Appearing thin with a fresh haircut, Belter remained unmoving through tearful victim statements. He did take the stand to apologize for causing, quote, pain, loss, heartache, loneliness, and confusion. Belter waiving his right to appeal what the judge called the longest penalty in his court's history for the politically motivated attacks against former House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark and Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette. Federal prison officials will now coordinate Belter's transfer to a permanent facility. No word on where that will be. Notable victim impact statements came from both of the Hortman children and Hope, Yvette, and John Hoffman. Attention now turns to Belter's state-level proceedings. Outside the federal courthouse in downtown Minneapolis, I'm Taylor Rivera. News Talk 830 WCCO.
Dan Cook also discussed the case on WCCO. Including the disappointment among some that Belter didn't receive the death penalty.
Biggest news story of the day, and it's going to be the biggest news story for a while, is the sentencing of Vance Belter this afternoon or this morning. And if you're following along like I was, obviously there were no cameras in the courtroom, but there are various different media outlets that were sending out information as it happened in real time. If you were following along and listening to some of the victim impact statements, which are a very necessary and important part of any kind of trial situation. I was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking to hear people like John Hoffman talking about violence never triumphing over justice. And the families of those impacted by this, it was just over and over and over again. Yvette Hoffman talking about how she genuinely believed that she was going to die. It was heartbreaking. It was really heartbreaking. And I'm glad those folks got a chance to say what they said. I'm not as impressed, and you know, I guess I didn't expect to be. But Vance Belter's statement, to every person I have caused loss, pain, heartache, confusion, sadness, shame, or loneliness, I am truly sorry. I mean, again, not that I expected him to be living in any kind of understandable reality, but goodness, talking about not being able to read the room. But I wanted to focus in on one thing because I want to ask you this question. Are you mad that there wasn't a trial? Or hasn't been a trial, because obviously now the state gets a shot at him, and it all would appear Mary Moriarty is definitely going to take that shot. But Mark Hortman's father was one of the people that testified. And he said during his victim impact statement that his family was deprived, quote unquote, of a trial that they deserved. And that he had gotten blown off after asking to speak to the acting U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche when the decision about the death penalty was still being weighed. And then he turned and addressed Vance Belter and said that the quote-unquote hottest fires of hell were waiting for him. He was clearly upset that there hadn't been a trial. He wanted a trial. He wanted the death penalty. And I understand that. Anybody related to a victim of a horrific crime like this would want there to be a retribution or vengeance in that sense. Which is why, of course, we don't let folks in that situation make the ultimate decision, but they still get to say their piece, and they should. But I'm curious if you think that we were denied something as a public, that not having a trial here. If you're waiting for Mary Moriarty to put Vance Belter on trial in a state case because you want there to be a trial, you want that whole kind of performance isn't the right word, but you want that stuff to come out. You want there to be testimony. You want all the facts. You want all of the inside stuff. Did you want there to be a trial? Are you mad that there wasn't a trial? Because I'll be honest with you, I'm not. I understand Mr. Hortman's anger, and I understand his frustration, and I don't judge him in any way, shape, or form. I'm just speaking as a private citizen. I'm not mad that there wasn't a trial. I'm not mad that we didn't spend a bunch of money convicting a guy who they had dead to rights and was willing to cop a plea deal. And I won't be mad if Mary Moriarty works out a plea deal with Vance Belter going forward and there isn't a state trial. I understand why she wants to do her bit, right? Because a state conviction or a state plea agreement means that, you know, no presidential pardon or other kind of nonsense can come in and interfere with the fact that Vance Belter is never going to take a breath of free air ever again in his life. Convicted to two, or he was sentenced to two consecutive life sentences, followed by 40 years. The man's never going to see free sunlight again, ever. And so the state can follow up and ensure that that never happens based on some silly federal decision by convicting him as well. But here's the thing. Do we really need to spend that money, that time, that potential impact on victims? Right? I'm glad the victims all got to say their piece today, except for Mark and Melissa Hortman, obviously. But the folks that are still with us, that they got to say their piece today, that's important. That's a good thing. But if there's a plea deal to be worked out, I don't know that we need a trial in this situation. I certainly understand why some people want it, but I don't know that we need it. Dan, no need to spend that money. He's never going to hurt anyone again. That's good enough for me. It's kind of where I think I stand on it, Lindsay. I just... Yeah. I get it. I get that we want our pound of flesh from this guy because of just how horrible what he did, was, and the callousness with which he did it. That was, of course, when we had the original plea agreement hearing, the one detail that stood out in everybody's mind is how he murdered Melissa Hortman. The specific details of following her up the stairs and just executing her was awful, was grotesque. So I get where people, you know, want some of that kind of stuff because they want to feel that justification for their anger. They want to feel that justification for the vengeance that they want. I get all of that. I just don't know that we need it. I'm not sure that that's good necessarily for anybody. Texter says, I'm not at all disappointed that there was no trial for Lance, for Vance Belter. It would have been weeks of rehashing only to arrive where we are now. Yeah, I sort of figure that's where we're at.
Cook also talked about the case with a man who called into the station.
All right, so what's your take on this, Dan? Did you want to see a trial? Do you want to see a state trial?
You know, it's funny that you brought this topic up today because at work I was sitting there, I read the articles and everything that he was convicted, and I thought to myself, huh, that was just too fast, too speedy.
Okay.
I wanted more info, but, you know, the other thing that really it concerns me is, you know, they give him two life sentences, and then they add on the 40-year thing.
Yep.
What's that all about? Just give him two life sentences, never let him see the day of light again. But to add the extra 40 years, I guess I really don't understand that. It just sounds redundant.
I understand what you're saying. I think that has a lot to do with the different charges that he was charged with, and you get certain sentences based on each of the charges.
Okay.
I think that it's more about that than anything else. It also sends a message, right? Especially when you have a case where the death penalty, at least at one point, was on the table, and there are plenty of people out there that wanted that. This is a way to say, essentially, you're giving him a death penalty. It's just going to take us 40, 50 years to get there. But he's never going to take a free breath of air ever again. And this it just ensures that, I guess.
As Belter is set to begin serving his life sentences, law enforcement in Minnesota is working on ways to cut down on crime in the state. Here's one report on the subject from WCCO this week.
Both Minneapolis and St. Paul police departments are facing a shortage of officers, which translates into potential trouble for everyone involved. Former St. Paul police chief Todd Axtell.
If officers are going call to call to call and working, you know, 20, 30 hours of overtime every week because your staffing is short, you're going to have exhausted officers and you're going to have more mistakes.
He says having enough officers matters.
the more crimes you solve, the less crimes you have in the future, because very few people proportionally in your community commit most of the crime.
Susie Jones, News Talk 830 WCCO.
Hennepin County Sheriff Dawana Witt also joined WCCO's Adam and Jordana show this week to discuss crime.
Let's talk about the physical temperature, because we have seen a brutal surge in violence all across Minneapolis lately, and St. Paul, two horrific mass shootings. The weather is heating up. Does the weather have a lot to do with the surge in violence?
I think it has something to do with it, but it's not an excuse. Right? Because we're all feeling the same temperature. It's not an excuse, you know, but what's out there that will help people detour from acting in a way that is harming not only the community, but themselves? You know, is there this lack of respect for your own life, for your own freedom? Because it seems to me that people just simply don't care anymore. And, you know, and we're speaking very broadly, and I think I should be very careful of that. But the people who are causing all of this harm and this discourse in the communities, do you have any respect for your own life? Do you have any respect for the people that love and care for you? Because it's not just the person that you're aiming at to make them miserable, but you're also going to make the people who care for you miserable, too. You know, I had plenty of family members who have unfortunately done time in prison. And one of the things that I would say to them is, that's your time, buddy. It's not mine. You know, it affects everyone. But I think it comes back down to, do they care about their own lives? Do they have any value in their own lives, their freedom? I just don't understand this level of senselessness that we are seeing with people committing such violent acts right now. I just don't understand it.
Guns, part of the problem, too. Obviously, we talk about that all the time, and that there are too many people who feel that way have access to firearms. And are you hopeful that anything lately, anything that is being talked about, can stem the tide of that to try to find people who shouldn't have guns and get those guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them?
You know what? Yes. I can tell you, what was it, maybe two nights ago, where one of my deputies made a traffic stop. And I want to say that there were five juveniles in that car, and there were several guns found in that car, you know, and it'd be interesting to see what happens when those things, when those guns and those casings are processed and what else they're going to tie to. There are simply too many people who should not have guns that have access to them and easily gets access to them. And that has to be an issue. Again, not everyone has the mentality to carry a gun. I mean, that should never be your first recourse to solving problems. We keep minimizing the ability to communicate. Mm-hmm. We keep minimizing the ability for a community to take care of our children, too. Mm-hmm. You know, we just have to do better. But yes, far too many guns in the hands of people who should not have them. We do know that, yes, there are people who are very responsible and law-abiding and careful with theirs, but we also have to acknowledge those that are not.
I do want to go back to what you just said, people not having value for their own life. Now, that's not something that we can necessarily legislate, but I do think that it's something that we can teach. I have been an advocate for a long time for teaching things like anger management starting in yes. kindergarten, yeah. Meditation starting in kindergarten, that kind of thing. You are a school resource officer. Mm-hmm. Is this something that is being taught, that should be taught? And do you think that starting, because this is something we can legislate,
right.
what we teach our kids in public schools, and kids are mandated to go to public schools, hopefully they do.
Yeah.
Is this something that you think would have a generational effect on the next generation if we started teaching these kind of techniques early on?
You know what I do? I mean, we have to teach our kids about problem solving young. We cannot let them see what we're seeing on the news every day in our communities every day, thinking that that is the normal way to take care or handle your problems is mm-hmm. with violence. You know, I think about just some of the things that used to be in our schools that are no longer, including like... home economics.
Yeah.
You know, just the basic mm-hmm. living skills. What have all those things been replaced mm-hmm. with? Mm-hmm. I think that we do need to be teaching our kids again how to de-escalate, how to solve problems, how to communicate mm-hmm. effectively. And it should start at an early age. I mean, what happens when you see a kid who has a temper tantrum? Do they get what they want? If you're giving them what they want, parents, that's not how you teach them, because what you're teaching them is to have a temper tantrum and you get what you want. No. Teach them how to effectively deal with whatever the chaos is in their life.
In Philadelphia, Odyssey station KYW News Radio also reported on second-degree murder sentencing.
It appears the Pennsylvania legislature will fail to meet a court-mandated deadline to address second-degree murder sentencing. On the eve of that deadline, the Democratic majority in the state House passed legislation on party lines rather than taking up a bill that passed the state Senate. KYW Suburban Bureau Chief Jim Melwert explains.
The Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled in March that mandatory life in prison for second-degree murder was unconstitutional and gave the legislature 120 days to come up with a fix. Republicans favored a Senate bill that passed last month, but House Democrats say the 35-year minimum in that bill is too punitive, noting some convicted of second-degree murder were part of the underlying crime, like armed robbery, but didn't actively participate in the homicide. House Majority Leader Montgomery County Democrat Matt Bradford says their plan allows the nonpartisan State Sentencing Commission to come up with a mandatory minimum.
This has the support of the governor. This, with one vote in the Senate, can go immediately into law and deal with those very concerns that other advocates have discussed.
House Minority Leader Republican Jesse Topper says the bill doesn't have Republican support and will not get through the GOP majority Senate.
Lobbying bills back and forth has not really shown to be an effective way to reach a conclusion on these kind of issues.
Pennsylvania Attorney General Dave Sunday says the penalties are grossly inadequate and that it allows convicted murderers multiple bites at the apple of getting early release.
And on the national scene, a court recently struck down an attempt from lawmakers in New Jersey to ban certain guns. Legal analyst Brad Young discussed this with the Dave Glover Show out of Odyssey station KMOX in St. Louis this week.
U.S. Appeals Court strikes down New Jersey's assault weapons ban on AR-15s.
Well, I think this is interesting because the Supreme Court's already said we're going to take this case up in the next term about whether under Illinois and Connecticut law, they both ban AR-15s. Those are now being combined or up at the Supreme Court next term. And so in this particular New Jersey case, where the Federal Court of Appeals pretty much, I think, render the decision based on what they think the Supremes are going to do next term, which is state that AR-15 has a useful purpose. It falls in line with the historical purposes of guns under the Second Amendment, and therefore it violates any bans of AR-15s violate the Second Amendment. So I just think it's interesting here that a court of appeals would make a decision based on what they think the Supreme Court's going to do, and you don't see that very often.
Brad, probably an unfair question to ask you, but where is the current line? Like, you can have an AR-15, you can't have a bazooka. Like, what's on the bubble?
Well, the Supreme Court said in Heller, going back to 2011, that you can, and in fact, Scalia wrote that opinion. He said you can place regulations on guns. They're not above regulation, but it has to fit within the historical purpose of guns. So I think where the line is it used for what guns have historically been used for, which is hunting, self-defense, and sport. If it falls into that category, it's going to be protected by the Second Amendment. So as you said, if you got a bazooka, that doesn't fall in line with any of those three.
Yeah.
And so I think that's – and, of course, I'm simplifying a 100-page decision in Heller into four sentences. But when you condense it down, I think that's the line.
It's a fascinating thing because it seems just a matter of who's making the definition, right? I mean, could I not argue that a fully automatic weapon is for my self-defense, just like a semi?
Yes, you could. And I think that's really where the court, because I don't see the court ever stating fully automatic weapons are going to be allowed. And why? If you look back historically, Wheels, people have never legally owned fully automatic weapons. Even if you go back into the Bonnie and Clyde days, right? And we see those those, and I've actually fired one of these, those old Tommy guns.
Yeah.
With the four, I mean, oh man, you talk about a thrill. That thing's great to shoot. But even then they were illegal, and they're illegal now unless you have a collector's license. And they've always been illegal since automatic weapons first came onto the scene. So I think you could make the argument that that doesn't fit in with the historical tradition. But your greater point is, how do we determine what is the historical tradition? And that certainly is in the eye of the beholder.
Brad, you like this story. I also got to shoot a Tommy gun when I was studying for the FBI Citizens Academy, and they took us out to the firing range, and I got to shoot a sniper rifle.
Ooh.
And one of the FBI agents who was a fan of the show, great guy, he put a picture of his face up as the target. And I shot him right through the eye. And,
wow.
And he said, you got to keep this. This is your souvenir. And about 3 days later, I had that in my old man bag, sort of an old leather pouch, and I was flying to Chicago, and it was in there.
Oh, no.
And they didn't pull it out, but I'm like, what am I going to say? Like, hey, this looks like you have a picture of a human with a bullet hole through his eye. Like, it's fine. He's an FBI agent. They're like, okay.
Oh, yeah. That makes it okay, right?
You can just come with us, sir. Put your hands behind your back.
Well, thankfully, that didn't show up on the X-ray screening when it went through, or else, you would have had a hard time explaining that away.
Thank you so much for listening to this True Crime Roundup from the On Deadline podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to 1010 Winds in New York, WCCO News and Talk in the Twin Cities, KYW News Radio in Philadelphia, The Dana and Parks Show out of KMBZ in Kansas City, Marty Griffin out of KDKA Radio in Pittsburgh, A New Morning out of WBEN News and Talk in Buffalo, and The Dave Glover Show out of KMOX in St. Louis. You can find these programs on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts. You can find these True Crime Roundups by subscribing to the On Deadline podcast, the Who Killed Strawberry podcast, or the Bitter Academia podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.